Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. Last week's program was about vaccine and mask mandates. And as I promised, this week I'd like to discuss COVID conspiracy theories. They range from extremes such as there's no such thing as COVID, or these vaccines are inserting microchips, to more reasonable positions such as this is government overreach. Politicians are soaking this crisis for political gain. And it's a challenge for Christians to wade through all of this information to arrive at some sound conclusions. It takes sanctified wisdom arrived from three sources, our experience from natural revelation, the news of the world, our understanding of people, the Word of God, written revelation, and the leading of the Holy Spirit. But not everyone is in tune with these things. And that's why the Bible warns us, 2 Peter 3:16, the untaught and the unstable distort the scriptures to their own destruction. 1 Corinthians 8:7, however, all men do not have this knowledge. Hebrews 5:12, when you ought to be teachers, you have need that one teach you again. 2 Timothy 3:5, those who are ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. And Acts chapter 3, verse 17. I know, brethren, that you acted in ignorance. And because of this ignorance of God's revelation, there are all sorts of wacky conspiracy theories and all sorts of true conspiracies that are discounted because of a lack of knowledge. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 2. To be without knowledge is not good. Proverbs 24, 3. By wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it's established. Hosea chapter 4, verse 6. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you from being my priest. Since you have forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children. So why is there a need to know? We ought not to be naive. We ought to know when a conspiracy is at hand. We should discern between good and evil. Jesus said that we should discern the signs of the time. We're to be as wise as serpents. And Proverbs chapter 25, verse 1, the glory of a king is to search out a matter. And I'm sure there is a Christian consensus that God's people have a civic responsibility to address these matters. This is loving one's neighbor. This is Ephesians chapter 5, exposing the hidden deeds of darkness. But before we get into the specifics of the COVID-19 situation, there are some preliminaries that need to be addressed so we have an overall understanding of conspiracy theories. So let's start with a working definition of conspiracy theory from Webster's. It's a theory that explains an event or a set of circumstances as the result of a secret plot by usually powerful conspirators. Second definition, a theory asserting that a secret of great importance is being kept from the public. The driving motive behind conspiracy theories is to provide an explanation as to why or how people are doing what they're doing, especially when they're doing something that's irrational or immoral. For example, you see the government wasting millions of dollars in boondoggle projects, and you have to come to the conclusion that someone's pocket is being lined because there's no other rational explanation for it. Follow the money. So the conspiracy theory is a way to explain and indict bad behavior. They're doing such and such because, and you fill in the blank. It's a way to indict bad policy. And often, it's not an accusation of there being a secret cabal, but it's an accusation of evil motives. For example, Tucker Carlson did a segment a couple weeks ago about how politicians are reacting to the COVID crisis. And his take was that political power is the driving motive. They rode COVID all the way to the White House. Quote, They can't part with the enormous, unprecedented levels of power they have amassed over the last year. And so they're going to keep ordering you around regardless of the science. Senator Rand Paul, Senator Ted Cruz, and other legislators have said the same thing about Democrat COVID policy. The conservative commentator Eric Erickson put out a piece last week entitled, "It Was Only Ever About the Power." So the point is that the explanation for what's happening and the enemy that we have to fight is the spirit of authoritarianism. And that may be true. In fact, I think it's a valid point that needs to be made. However, an attack on motives should never be the main argument. Only a side note. The main argument needs to be the rightness or the wrongness of the policy itself. Those on the other side of the argument, those in support of vaccine mandates, lockdowns, masking, are also attacking the motives of their opponents. You know, they call their opponents science deniers, that they're operating on fear and ignorance. Remember Hillary Clinton? She used to say that there's this vast right-wing conspiracy. Well, my point here is not to determine who is right and who is wrong, but first to consider the nature of conspiracy theories. What are valid and invalid conspiracy theories? What are strong arguments and what are weak arguments? And what is the nature of the charge used to explain your opponent's behavior and to further indict? So much of what is being argued today in regard to COVID-19 is all about intent and motives. They're saying this, but what they really want to do is, and you fill in the blank, let's look at a few scriptural examples. Both right examples of indicting motives and unjust examples. First, examples of the wicked indicting the motives and the intents of the righteous. When David was bringing food to his brothers while they were fighting the Philistines, David's brothers were jealous of David, so they falsely accused his motives for coming. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 28, "I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle." Well, how did David's older brother know David's motives? He didn't, but he was sure he could connect the dots. And there's a lot of people out there who think that there's some type of Sherlock Holmes able to read people's minds. And often it's a superimposing of one's own motives upon others. You know, this is why I would do such and such, and so that's why I think you're doing it. And most accusations are actually sinful falsehood and gossip. Another example, Jeremiah chapter 37, verse 13. When Jeremiah went out of the city of Jerusalem for a day, the leaders of the city accused Jeremiah of going out secretly to conspire with the Babylonians. Because apart from getting something from the Babylonians, they couldn't imagine any other reason why Jeremiah would prophesy that Jerusalem would fall to Babylon. Just like the left accuses Christians of opposing homosexuality out of fear, out of ignorance, out of homophobia, because they don't believe that there is actually a law of God, and so they have to provide some other explanation for why Christians oppose their lifestyle. And here we learn another lesson about conspiracy theories and false accusation. It is a way in which people don't have to deal with the issue itself because they don't want to have to argue on that plane. So they resort to indicting the motives of their opponents, which doesn't require any proof, just the force and the emotion of their accusation. Realize that even in accusations coming from the political right against the political left, accusations that their motives are power and money are the poorest accusations. That they may have evil motives is true, And likely, if they are doing evil, they have evil motives. But it's better to deal with the intrinsic rightness or wrongness of the policy at hand. In socialism, the politician may want power for himself. But the argument needs to be the intrinsic evils of socialism, not the motive. Because people will even do good things with evil motives, but that doesn't make the thing evil. So just indicting the CDC and Fauci, their motives, it is not a good argument against their policy. It doesn't even matter if their motive is a money motive, because a lot of people are motivated to do things to provide for their family. And it doesn't even matter if they conspire together behind closed doors, because a lot of good things are done in this world by planning. When you merely indict your opponent's motives, you don't win anyone to your side. You only empower your opponent because they can easily discount your accusations and they can claim unjust victimization. Evil actors, those who promote lawless, unbiblical policy, actually believe that they're doing the right thing, that they're out to help people. Very few, if any, think to themselves, I am a fraud, I'm a thief, I'm a liar, and I want to destroy everyone. Instead, they think, I can't reveal all truth to all people for their own good, or they think the ends justify the means. Evil actors are out for power, but their opinions are blinded by their desire for power, so that they assume that which gives them more power is the morally right thing to do. Because they base what is right and wrong on that which helps people, which includes themselves. They think, surely if something helps me to achieve power, it must also be the right thing to do. So look how magnanimous I am. I'm helping others and I'm helping myself. Their basis for right and wrong is human gain, not the law of God. And that's the meaning of 1 Timothy 6:5. Constant friction between men of depraved minds and deprived of the truth who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. In other words, for them, what is right morally is what brings them gain. And that's how they're deceived into thinking they're doing right and helping people, even though they're violating God's laws and principles. Sin is much more deceiving and subtle than most people realize. So my point is this. When the right accuses the left of doing what they're doing out of love for power, the left can easily say, no, we're trying to help people, we're being civil servants. If we're doing these things out of love for power, why are you running for office? It's a no-win argument. But when you indict the policy itself, then your opponents have to deal with the morality of their actions. Well, I hope I'm not losing you in all this. Let's get back to some other biblical examples of the wicked indicting the motives of the righteous. In Isaiah chapter 8, the people were accusing the prophet Isaiah of being in a conspiracy with the Assyrian Empire against his own nation, Israel. Isaiah chapter 8, verse 12, you are not to say it is a conspiracy in regard to all that the people call a conspiracy, and you are not to fear what they are in fear of or be in dread of it. Isaiah was opposed to Israel seeking help from foreign nations, but that was the policy of Israel's leadership. But notice, they accused the prophet of God of being in a conspiracy against the people. And so we see an accusation of conspiracy for ideological reasons. Like the false conspiracy theory that President Trump was in collusion with the Russians, or that Obama was an Islamic plant. Do evil actors actually conspire with foreign nations? Absolutely. But the accusations must be based on real evidence, not ideological wishful thinking. Then there was the governor, Festus, accusing Paul of having gone insane Acts chapter 26, verse 24, it was the only explanation that Festus could provide for Paul's truth claims, because Festus did not want to deal with the issues themselves. And there are just many examples in Scripture of the wicked plotting against the righteous and making false accusations against them. But the greatest example is that of the accusations against Jesus. Matthew chapter 12, verse 24, the Pharisees accuse Jesus of casting out demons by Beelzebub, the ruler of demons, as if Jesus was in a plot with the devil to impersonate the Messiah. Now, on the other hand, there are righteous indictments against evil, against conspiracies, people with real evil motives and intent. In Galatians chapter 4, verse 17, Paul warns against false teachers who are just out to get followers. In Philippians chapter 1, Paul warns against those who preach Christ out of the motives of envy and strife. Matthew chapter 23, Jesus accused the power-hungry, fame-seeking motives of the Pharisees, Matthew 23, 6. They love the place of honor at banquets and the chief seats in the synagogues and respectful greetings in the marketplaces and being called rabbis by men. Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites. And this is where Christians can find justification for indicting the motives of others. Jesus did it. And if it looks like a duck, if it swims like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. But this is Jesus we're talking about. He knew all men. On our part, we must be careful not to assume people's motives. And even if the motive is obvious, attacking the motive is not a good argument unless we have other hard evidence of wrongdoing. But as far as examples of evil conspiracies, the grand conspiracy of all is the Pharisees plotting to kill Jesus. And when Jesus pointed this out, the people denied that this conspiracy existed. John chapter 7, verse 19. Jesus said, "Did not Moses give you the law? And yet none of you carries out the law. Why do you seek to kill me?" The crowd answered, "You have a demon who seeks to kill you." I really find this interesting that the common people could not imagine the Pharisees were plotting to kill Jesus. They were a little too naive about the nature of sin and the ambition of their leaders. They didn't know what their leaders were up to. And that's a lesson that applies to conspiracy theories today. Don't be too quick to discount the plotting of the wicked. Psalm 64, 6. They devise injustice, saying, "We are ready with a well-conceived plot." There are people operating with evil motives and plans, and we must discern the situation rightly. So that was all by way of introduction. What about the COVID-19 situation? How are we supposed to discern that? Is there really a control motive, a political gain motive, a population control motive? Or is this just good people trying to help others fight the coronavirus the best way they know how? Now, as Christians, knowing that human nature is sinful, when we approach a crisis like this, we should expect that there are evil actors. People who either cause the situation or take advantage of the situation. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 29. "This only I have found. God made man upright, but men have gone in search of many schemes." Or Psalm 58, 3. "The wicked are estranged from the womb. These who speak lie go astray from birth." So, as I mentioned last week, a Christian worldview, given the nature of man, is to be a little suspicious in all things. That's good profiling. Otherwise, we will be like Ephesians 4, 14, children tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by craftiness in deceitful scheming. there Paul is saying that men are going to be tricksters, that there are people who engage in deceitful scheming. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 22. How long, O naive one, will you love being simple-minded? Proverbs chapter 1, verse 32. For the waywardness of the naive will kill them. Proverbs 14, 15. The naive believe everything, but the sensible man considers his steps. Proverbs 27, 12. A prudent man sees the evil and hides himself. The naive proceed and pay the penalty. But what is the sin, especially in reaction to this virus? Is it the sin of fear? Is it the sin of wanting control? Is it the sin of malice? Is it the sin of stupidity? Hallon's razor. Never attribute to malice that which can be adequately explained by stupidity. There may not be an agenda at all. It just could be these scientists and politicians are ignorant of the microbiological world. In their pride, they're professing to know more than they do know. Just like in the 19th century, scientists were sure about all sorts of wrong scientific assumptions. Hallon's razor is humorous, but we know it's not always true. People are morally responsible for their stupidity, and sometimes stupidity flows out of malice. Bad policy can flow out of human pride, where leaders assume they know and they can do more than they can know and do. That's why the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So maybe we should include in the razor, never attribute to stupidity that which can be adequately explained by egotism. If there is a COVID conspiracy, it could be nothing more or at least include the hubris of our leaders thinking that they know it all, so you're not allowed to doubt them. A case where ideology and humanism, not real science, rules the day. Another question. On which side is this malice and stupidity? On the side of the maskers or the non-maskers? I was just reading a piece in the Washington Post. Right-wing anti-vaccine hysteria is increasing. We're all paying the price. And that title is hilarious. It sure seems like all of the hysteria is coming from the maskers and the vaxxers. They're the ones running scared. They're the ones saying we're going to die if we don't all mask up. But that is the power of ideological bias. You see the other side as being hysterical and radical, but not yourself. Each side sees the evil in human nature being on the other side of the argument. By the way, who do you think makes up the non-vaxxers? The religious or the non-religious? Leftist media pundits make it appear as if these religious people, with their superstitions and fears, are against the science. Now, this assumption is without any proof, but they say it anyway because it's part of their worldview. But in a recent study by a progressive left group, they reported that as a percentage, more non-religious people are against vaccines than religious people. By May of this year, 62% of evangelicals have been vaccinated, while only 47% of non-religious people. Of those who have not gotten the vaccine, more evangelicals say that they're likely to get the vaccine than non-religious individuals. And that goes against the current narrative in the media. Well, regardless of what you think about evangelical participation in vaccines, the survey shows it is not an anti-science, faith-religious issue. The secularists don't trust government even more than the evangelicals, maybe because it takes one to know one. And really, this is no surprise to me because the anti-vaccine movement in New Jersey that's been going on for the last 10 years in regard to vaccines for your children is not populated with parents on the political right, but parents on the political left. Well, one thing's for sure, we cannot broad brush the motives and the reasons behind COVID-19 responses. It's a mixture of motives in various degrees, a mixture of various opinions concerning what should be the government's right course of action. Let's break the pro-mask, pro-vaccine, pro-mandate group into four different groups. You have the public, who are for lockdowns and vaccine mandates. There are the politicians, the civic leaders, the medical establishment, and then fourth, the media. Each group probably has its own reasons. Much of the public may be motivated out of fear or safety concerns, even a socialist mindset. If I feel I need to get the vaccine, I want you also to be forced to get the vaccine, otherwise it wouldn't be fair. Or if you don't mask up and get vaccinated, you're threatening my health. The public could be operating on scientific ignorance. The masses have had a track record throughout history of being wrong. I mean, after all, someday the world is going to worship the Antichrist. The globalists will not need to force their agenda. I've really been surprised by the public's demand for draconian COVID measures. DeSantis signed an executive order prohibiting schools from requiring masks on children. And you think everyone would be in favor of that. But the Florida Broward County School Board is ignoring his order and requiring children to wear masks anyway. And the same thing is happening in Texas. The Austin and Dallas school boards are defying the governor's non-mask orders. Even in Tennessee, Clay Travis, you know that he's the commentator who took over for the Rush Limbaugh show, stood up at a school board meeting and gave a rational scientific reason why children in school should not be forced to wear masks. But then the school board still voted to put masks on children. Afterwards, Travis tweeted, "So put a mask mandate in place only for elementary school students, those 5 to 11 year olds, the school ages least at risk from COVID in the entire country. All mask mandates are unscientific madness. Young kids being forced to wear masks makes the least possible sense." Well, you think maybe this is just, you know, liberal school board members doing this, but they're doing this because they have the support of many parents and many teachers. You know, after this Delta scare, I am seeing twice as many people in the stores masking up, even though most of them probably have been vaccinated. Realize that the people who do not have saving faith are petrified of death, even to the point of being irrational. They're more fearful than what they let on. I mean, it doesn't matter if there's just a 1 in a million chance, any possibility of death must be eliminated. And this fear is described in the Bible. We need to take this into account. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 15. "Because of fear of death, they were subject to slavery all of their lives." Because of fear, they are emotionally, socially, and politically in bondage. Here's an article. Oklahoma school board member says students could commit murder by not wearing masks. People actually think this way. And when that group starts making up 51% of the population, you get bad policy. Or if the fearmongers are only 10%, but the other 90% of the population doesn't fight back, we also get bad policy. The next group, the politicians. They may be motivated by a desire to help people, or a desire to avoid the political backlash of doing nothing. If a situation will eventually fix itself and isn't helped at all by the government, politicians are still motivated to do something anyway so they can take the credit for it. Politicians, like all people, want to feel useful, especially being in a useless government job. They want to feel important. Everyone enjoys a sense of being a savior. And this is another description of the control paternal motive in politicians. Case in point, Newsom, governor of California. When COVID first broke out, He spent $1 billion with a Chinese company to buy masks for the Californian people. I mean, people can buy and make their own masks, but Newsom, being a statist, thinks that the government has to do it for you. Is this a conspiracy? Or is this financial stupidity? He doesn't know the value of the dollar because he's been raised with a silver spoon in his mouth. Or is this a paternal statist attitude? Well, maybe it's all three. Now, the medical establishment may also be motivated by wanting to have significance. Finally, they spent their whole life working in this field, and now they're getting some attention. Now they're feeling useful, and they don't want to give that up. The money motive is also there. The government was paying these pharmaceutical companies $40 a shot. The Biden administration upped it to $80 a shot. What better thing could a business ask for? And the banning of treatment drugs like ivermectin is just too suspicious. Now, the media, that group, which includes Facebook, Google, Twitter, they're also people who want to feel important and useful. A crisis sells papers, or rather sells clicks. And the media always likes for there to be a crisis. And if there's not a crisis, they'll make up one. Management may want COVID stories front and center. Maybe for some political purpose, maybe out of their own fears or the desire to help the current administration, or maybe just to avoid writing about other stories. The media has mixed motives. But we know this, it's not all about the science and people's health. What's really been outrageous is that social media is closing down any site that doesn't go along with the current medical narrative. Programs that question the efficacy of the vaccine are taken down. I could list hundreds of examples, but just one last week, this article. Sky News Australia purged several videos from YouTube after ban over COVID misinformation. Because they mentioned hydroxychloroquine as a treatment, not as a cure, they were banned. Since when does YouTube judge medical advice and treatment? Well, ever since the Biden administration admitted to the fact that they're contacting social media companies concerning sites that they believe need to be taken down. And that's a conspiracy because that's unconstitutional for the federal government to pressure private companies to hinder free speech. So if you want a conspiracy, there's one right there. You know, I've been looking into many different accusations against the CDC, Fauci, and Big Pharma in regard to COVID-19. And many of these accusations make sense, and they have proof. But the medical establishment, these government agencies, don't have to answer to these suspicions and findings because the media covers for them and buries their opposition. So it should be obvious to all of us that the safest approach would be to expose both sides of the argument. Let the arguments on both sides be put out there and let the people decide. If the CDC has a better answer for the accusations, then the CDC wins. But censoring criticism is dangerous, because often in history, the minority is right. For the last year, Facebook was censoring any post that said that the virus was man-made and came out of China, as if they were trying to protect our relationship with China, or that might create racism against Chinese people. Well, the evidence became so overwhelming, and a number of Democrats started to agree with the Wuhan lab theory that Facebook changed its policy. You can now say on Facebook that the virus was man-made. If Facebook was wrong about that, what else could they be wrong in? Maybe it'll be discovered that the conspiracy theories are true. The vaccines are not as effective as they claim, and the death rates and the side effects from the vaccines are serious. Maybe we discovered that the medical establishment is going about this in the wrong way. But we'll never know that because these social media companies are deciding for us which science is right and censoring all contrary opinions. And Google is doing this. I see this every week when I do research. Just ask the question to Google related to COVID-19. Let's say, what are the side effects from the vaccine? And all you'll get is pro-vaccine articles. But go to another search engine, ask the same exact question, and you'll get all of the medical results that contradict the narrative of Fauci and the CDC. So this is not a conspiracy theory. This is a fact. Google is suppressing the science that opposes the narrative. And that's a conspiracy of arrogance. So we have these groups with their various motives. And I doubt that they all sat down in some smoke-filled back room and came up with a nefarious plan to make hay out of the COVID-19 situation. They were all probably working off of their own self-interest. But the problem is, when these various social groups put their self-interest before the truth, then we get a Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 31 situation. But the prophets prophesy falsely, and the priests rule by their own authority, and my people love it so, but what will you do in the end thereof? All three groups, the prophets, the priests, and the people, have a wrong worldview. It's not a conspiracy of the people working together. It's a conspiracy of too many people, from the citizen to the civic leader, having a common flawed worldview that results in the whole nation adopting bad policy. So needless to say, I don't think that this all is a plot by the Bilderberg Group or by the Council for Foreign Relations or by the UN. This is just fallen humanity doing together what fallen humanity does. They don't need instructions from the top. They all work in concert because they have all the same fears. They have all the same need for control. They all have the same humanist agenda. They all walk according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that's now working in the sons of disobedience. Ephesians chapter 2. Someone could even accuse Christians of conspiring together to evangelize the world, but we don't have to get together to plan that. We operate all on the leading of the Spirit and by the Great Commission. And that's true also for Satan's kingdom and his agenda. They all operate together by the same Spirit. And if it was just one evil group perpetrating a lie on the American public, that would be easy to fix. But the problem is what Jeremiah experienced. My people love it so. They love the lie. So if there's a conspiracy, it's a conspiracy of human pride, bad science, irrational fears that started the pandemic in the first place and has resulted in continual disastrous policy. Certain people use the pandemic to further their own agenda. All the evidence points to scientists in their arrogance playing the role of God. In adding gain of function to a SARS virus, Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Infectious Disease, when questioned by Senator Rand Paul, testified before the Senate that the CDC's funding into genetically modifying viruses in Wuhan so that these viruses could go from animals into the human population. Fauci said it is not gain of function and thereby not illegal. Rand Paul responded, as we all would, "Sounds like gain of function to me." While all the other senators were going about with the status quo, Rand Paul, who's a medical doctor, is pursuing the truth. Remember in the crucifixion of Christ, of the 70 Sanhedrin, only two stood up against the consensus, Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus. Well, since this interaction between Fauci and Rand Paul is going to go down in history, let's just watch it again.
Viruses that in nature only infect animals were manipulated in the Wuhan lab to gain the function of infecting humans. This research fits the definition of the research that the NIH said was subject to the pause in 2014 to 2017, a pause in funding on gain of function. But the NIH failed to recognize this, defines it away, and it never came under any scrutiny. Dr. Richard E. Bright, a molecular biologist from Rutgers, described this research in Wuhan as, "The Wuhan lab used NIH funding to construct novel chimeric SARS-related coronaviruses able to infect human cells and laboratory animals. This is high-risk research that creates new potential pandemic pathogens that exist only in the lab, not in nature. This research matches," these are Dr. Ebright's words, "this research matches, indeed epitomizes, the definition of gain-of-function research done entirely in Wuhan, for which there was supposed to be a federal pause." Dr. Fauci, knowing that it is a crime to lie to Congress, do you wish to retract your statement of May 11th where you claimed that the NIH never funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress, and I do not retract that statement. This paper that you are referring to was judged by qualified staff up and down the chain as not being gain of function.
You take an animal virus and you increase its transmissibility to humans,
right.
You're saying that's not gain of function?
Yeah, that is correct. And Senator Paul, you do not know what you are talking about, quite frankly. And I want to say that officially. You do not know what you are talking about.
Let's read from the NIH definition of gain of function. This is your definition that you guys wrote. It says that scientific research that increases the transmissibility among mammals is gain of function. They took animal viruses that only occur in animals, and they increased their transmissibility to humans. How you can say that is not gain of function?
It is not.
It's a dance, and you're dancing around this because you're trying to obscure responsibility for 4 million people dying around the world from a pandemic.
So we could spend the next few hours together looking into all the accusations against the medical establishment, but that's not my purpose here. I just want to give you an overview. But I want to end with one quote from a medical doctor, Dr. David Martin, who has been looking into how scientists and big pharma have been messing around with genetically modifying viruses for the last 15 years and getting patents in that regard. Dr. Martin here is quoting his favorite quote from a Dr. Peter Daszak, who is the president of the EcoHealth Alliance. According to Wikipedia, it's a nonprofit, non-governmental organization that supports various programs on global health and pandemic prevention. This organization administers more than $100 million in U.S. federal grants to fund overseas laboratory experiments. So here's Dr. Martin.
So for those who want to live in the illusion that somehow or another that's the end of the story, be prepared for a greater disappointment, because somebody knew something in 2015 and 2016, which gave rise to my favorite quote of this entire pandemic. And by that, I'm not being cute. My favorite quote of this pandemic was a statement made in 2015 by Peter Daszak. The statement that was made by Peter Daszak in 2015, reported in the National Academies of Press publication, February 12, 2016, and I'm quoting, "We need to increase public understanding of the need for medical countermeasures such as a pan-coronavirus vaccine. A key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. End quote.
So does this mean Big Pharma is in a conspiracy to create COVID-19 to make money? Well, not necessarily, but at least it shows us that there are nefarious actors who will take advantage of a situation for personal gain. They will create hype in the media to achieve their ends. And the hype of the politicians and the public is going to be overblown and misguided. The conspiracy is the hubris of those who create a virus and the hubris of those reacting to the virus. Isaiah chapter 8, verse 12. You are not to say it is a conspiracy in regard to all that the people call a conspiracy, and you are not to be in fear of what they are in fear of or be in dread of it. It is the Lord of hosts whom you should regard as holy. He shall be your fear, and he shall be your dread. I don't fear conspiracies, for God will bring punishment down upon these people's heads. God will thwart their plans and they will fail. I fear the Lord. And with that, I will end. Don't forget to subscribe, to share, to like, to leave a comment below, and may Jesus Christ reign.